How can you make a difference on this crazy planet? Listen to nature-inspired stories and interviews with environmental educators for some new ideas. Sustainable Living News writer, nature walker, and youth educator Wendy Natterney-Fashon hosts the Story Walking Radio Hour to talk about issues that matter and to introduce you to people who are coming up with creative, sensible solutions. Let's engage with Earth, with spirit, and with one another, heart to heart, to solve problems and co-create more meaningful life stories. Tune in to Nature's Loving Vibes every Monday at 9 a.m. and 9 p.m. here on the Dream Vision 7 Radio Network.
Welcome to the Story Walking Radio Hour. I'm your host, Wendy Natterney-Fashon, here on the syndicated Dream Vision 7 Radio Network, which is the media partner for Omega Institute. For a full schedule of Dream Vision 7 radio programming, go to dreamvision7radio.com. You'll find this show listed under the Sustainable Living tab, or you can access it through my website at storywalking.com. This episode is sponsored by the Empowerment Factory, a nonprofit dedicated to giving at-risk youth the skills to lead happier, healthier, more empowered lives. This organization provides virtual and in-person programs that foster creativity, self-esteem, and civic pride. The Empowerment Factory offers creative environmental learning experiences like remote learning nature drawing workshops and in-person art in the park events. To learn more, visit www.theempowermentfactory.org. The Story Walking Radio Hour is a creative environmental education experience that seeks to piece together a blueprint for a green economy. Each month, we present a different piece highlighting a particular sustainability challenge, and then we explore creative, practical solutions. Today's piece of the sustainability puzzle is food waste recycling. By sharing ideas that have begun sprouting in our little region of the country, we can reap the early results and spread some of the seeds of these efforts to other areas of the country and further abroad. So, let's dig in. We have a lot of ground to cover today. This past summer, Rhode Island approved a legislative bill titled School Waste Recycling and Refuse Disposal. The legislation requires all K-12 and vocational schools to produce a waste audit report. Now, this report should include guidelines and strategies that will eliminate food waste, promote recycling, and provide excess food to nearby communities. So we'll talk about this as we go forward in the show. This process, this auditing process, is expected to begin in January of 2022. So, okay, how might a school begin this process? Here to talk with us today are James Corwin and Chris Ratcliffe. They're the co-directors of the Rhode Island Schools Recycling Club. Jim and Chris created the club 20 years ago in partnership with the Rhode Island Resource Recovery Corporation and the Rhode Island Department of Environmental Management. And they have helped a lot of schools establish different types of recycling programs. More recently, the Rhode Island Schools Recycling Club was awarded a Healthy Communities grant from the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency to fund the Get Food Smart Rhode Island Challenge, a two-year food waste recycling initiative. Jim and Chris guide individual schools in implementing programs for reducing, recovering, and recycling food waste, among other things. And they are dedicated to educating the next generation of environmental leaders and providing students with the tools they need to create sustainable solutions. I am truly honored to have Jim and Chris here today with us on the Story Walking Radio Hour. And interestingly, Jim's career spans decades in both radio and marketing. He has coordinated numerous Earth Day cleanups, promotions, and concerts in partnership with the Rhode Island Attorney General's Office. In partnership with Rhode Island Department of Environmental Management, It's in 2019, I guess, with a grant from the Rhode Island Attorney General's office. Jim led a project to measure food waste in Rhode Island schools. And we'll be hearing more about this later in the show. Chris now has worked as a marketing consultant for decades, having spent years in the broadcasting industry. And in partnership with the Environment Council of Rhode Island Education Fund, Chris spearheaded an effort to divert food waste from Rhode Island public schools as early as 2005. Chris is an associate professor at the Community College of Rhode Island and a lecturer at Bryant University. And occasionally he teaches business classes at the Rhode Island Adult Correctional Facility in Cranston. Before bringing on our esteemed guests, however, let's talk story walking. While out walking 2 days ago, I noticed a small snack wrapper sitting at the edge of our lawn. Picking it up, I discovered that it was an unopened single-serving packet of Oreo cookies. What a lovely coincidence. The special treat fits in perfectly with my plans for this month's episode. Today's episode, so you will soon see. In preparation for today's episode, I went on an investigative walking adventure, which took me a half mile from my home to our town's middle school. I wanted to do a little sleuthing and see what type of waste is generated by the school. While the school building was locked and I was unable to access the indoor cafeteria, I did have access to the outdoor eating area and the 6 trash cans placed near the picnic tables. I stuck my iPhone into the side opening of a trash can ever so carefully without touching anything and took a snapshot of the items that were visible near the surface of the black plastic garbage bag that lined the can. I repeated this procedure inside 3 other cans. Then, upon returning home, I studied the photographs and made a list of the items that were visible in the photos. I reorganized my list into categories, plastic, paper, metal, and food, to represent different waste streams. What I observed or saw was mostly plastic packaging. In the category of plastic items, I listed, let's see here, assorted plastic drink bottles, styrofoam meal trays, a clear plastic fruit cup, a small white plastic snack tray, clear plastic drink cups, plastic straws, a plastic fork, plastic wrap, Ziploc bags, chip packages, and a disposable face mask. Those blue and white single-use protective face masks are made of propylene plastic. And when buried in a landfill, that mask will take 450 years to decompose. That's why I use a washable cotton face mask when I need to use one. Plastic bags take 10 to 20 years to decompose. Plastic bottles will take 450 years. And styrofoam takes 500 years. And although they decompose, decompose simply means these items break down into smaller plastics, which are still problematic. All of these plastic items are non-biodegradable. And we talked about this in our June episode about designing biomaterials for circular economy. And in that same episode, we spoke with a guest who works at designing biodegradable plastics as a future solution. It's a pretty cool episode. You definitely check it out if you haven't already. Getting back to my school trash can list, we have the paper items, and these include True Moo single-serve milk cartons, a paper French fry holder, paperboard lunch boxes, and single-serve pizza boxes. Schools package a lot of meals in paperboard boxes. And besides taking up landfill space, there's another unrealized ecological cost to paperboard packaging waste, and that is energy consumption. I once led some elementary students on a walking field trip to a paperboard manufacturing plant near their school. It was really cool. Packaging production itself consumes a large amount of energy. Electricity is required to run huge printing presses, die cutting machines, carton folding machines, and gluing machines. My students witnessed the amount of scrap produced by the die cutting process, and they watched the scraps get baled into massive cubes in order to be returned to the paper manufacturing company for recycling. But anyway, you know, take a moment to think about this. And the next time you finish a box of cereal or, say, rice, pull it apart at the glued seams, lay the box out flat, examine the shape and the printed graphics, and then imagine the die cutting process or the ink requirements for from the, you know, putting the ink on from the press. And just think about all, you know, all that and consider the energy that's required to create this one box. And of course then they, you know, they create thousands and thousands of such boxes. If you place that flattened box into a recycling bin, it can be reused to make other paper products. If you throw it into the trash, it will take up landfill space needlessly. And we'll get back to that in a little bit. Now, getting back to my school trash can list, there are other types of packaging, such as aluminum cans, a foil wrapper, a foil juice pouch, a Tetra-style juice box, and there are a few other things. Now, aluminum cans can be recycled, but I'm not so sure about the foil wrappers and the foil juice packaging. My list also includes food waste, such as some slices of cucumber I saw in there, and a clear plastic clamshell that was still holding leftover salad. So, now that we have an understanding of what is going in a school trash can, how many tons of food waste do you think the typical middle school sends to the landfill each year? I let my fingers do the walking on the Rhode Island Recycling Club's online food waste estimator to try and figure out the math. My town's middle school has roughly 600 students enrolled. And based on prior food audit research, a middle school student produces an average of 39.3 pounds of waste per year. This may seem insignificant until we crunch the numbers. Here, let me tap this out of my calculator. Whoa! We can estimate that this middle school disposes about 12 tons of food waste annually. That's a lot of waste, and that's just one school. So now, let's follow that trash to the landfill. What happens there? Well, organic materials such as paper, paperboard, and food are the largest component of municipal solid waste, and once buried, organic waste produces methane gas. The problem with methane is that it is a greenhouse gas, 25 times more problematic than carbon dioxide. 25 times! Now, I know how concerned students are about climate change. And by sorting and redirecting their lunchtime waste away from landfills, they can make a big difference. Any waste that students can help redirect to more useful purposes reduces the output of methane. And I think this realization can be really empowering for the students. Okay, so now that we understand what has prompted the newly announced school waste recycling and refuse disposal legislation, that's a mouthful, wow, let's take some time to get into the nitty-gritty of that legislation. The legislation proposes waste auditing. Waste audit means an analysis of a facility's waste stream. The audit can identify what types of recyclable materials and waste a school generates, how much of each category is recovered for recycling, and how much is discarded. The audit will also identify materials that can be composted. The waste audit will include guidelines and strategies for a school or district to incorporate into its food waste reduction and recycling programs. The school can then design and implement a waste collection system in accordance with applicable state law for the diversion of items, including but not limited to, plastic, glass, cardboard, and surplus food. The list of audit items will also include paper, books, furniture, computers, and office supplies, which may be subjects for another show. Okay, so how does a school go about ordering a waste audit? The Rhode Island Resource Recovery Corporation, which manages the state landfill and recycling programs, will provide technical assistance to help schools start or improve diversionary programs, and this includes conducting free waste audits. Once a school has a plan of action, it can begin to reduce the amount of waste being disposed to the landfill while potentially saving the town money in tipping fees. The Rhode Island Resource Recovery Corporation also provides some great education materials. Schools can start the audit process by visiting the Rhode Island Resource Recovery Corporation website at riirc.org. Their administrators can, they're also at that website, administrators can review the educational programs and support section of the website. And there they'll find a form that they can fill out for the waste audit. This section also features a lot of great resources for students and teachers, including virtual tours of the recycling facilities, online presentations, classroom activities, student projects, internship opportunities, and the new waste sorting game, an interactive learning experience with 5 levels of challenge. I've tried it out, and yeah, it's a challenge. It's definitely a challenge. It's a lot of fun, too. Each school's waste management program design and implementation will require a commitment from the entire school community, and I think this is where it can get challenging, because you need to involve school administrators, teachers, parent leaders, students, janitors, and perhaps most importantly, the food service managers and line staff. So maybe Jim and Chris can tell us a little bit more about how they manage all this as they get involved in some of their past projects. Generally, a school district contracts with a large food service corporation, such as a Sodexo or an Aramark, which serves as a school's vendor, managing the cafeteria, the lunchroom employees, the meal program, and product procurement. The school district's contracting process begins with a request for proposal, or an RFP. So schools, every couple of years, they reevaluate whoever's providing their food service. And with that proposal, there's many factors to consider, reference to, maybe safety issues, quality, service, cost, budget sharing, the menus, type of menus, whatever. And the new school waste recycling and refuse disposal legislation encourages districts to select a vendor that meets 3 additional criteria as related to recycling. One, the vendor must purchase 10% of the required food service product from a Rhode Island-based company, keeping some of what they buy local, purchasing locally. Number 2, the vendor must recycle organic waste materials at an authorized composting facility, an anaerobic digestion facility, or other authorized recycling method. And then number 3, the vendor must donate any unserved, non-perishable, or unspoiled perishable food to local food banks in accordance with the recommendations from the Rhode Island Department of Health. When perfectly good unopened food is thrown in the trash, that's a tragic waste. Many food service operations have already established share tables at the schools. A share table is a cart or a table where students can place unopened food and beverages or food items with, say, a peel that they choose not to consume. Most schools are allowed to donate shelf-stable items like granola bars and perishable goods like milk, yogurt, and fresh produce. That unopened packet of Oreos I found during my walk 2 days ago is another example of a shareable item. Providing composting bins is another strategy for reducing food waste. The school recycling club has established partnerships with a number of organizations that compost food waste. One of these partners, Earth Care Farm, is the largest composting facility in the state. And one of my favorite story walking radio hour episodes, my March 2020 episode, titled Earth Care Composting for Climate Restoration, it features Jane Murner Senecal, the owner of Earth Care Farm. You can find this episode on my Dream Vision 7 radio archive page or through my storywalking.com website. Go to the guest page, and there you'll find Jane. Families can help reduce food waste by packing lunch at home and doing so in an eco-conscious manner. Parents can teach sound food waste and sustainability practices to their children by helping them prepare and pack their own lunches. Here are some ideas. Shop organic. Choose an organic apple, tangerine, or banana wrapped in its own natural skin. Avoid the excess packaging. Use washable lunch boxes or lunch sacks. Pack carrot sticks, sweet pepper strips, cucumber slices, or pickles in a small reusable Tupperware container. Get creative. Use another container with cubes of leftover, or fill another container with cubes of leftover chicken or homemade cookies. Fill a small thermos with homemade soup or hot pasta or dinner leftovers. Provide water or juice in a refillable water bottle. And finally, ask your child to leave the leftovers in the lunchbox, and then, after school, help him or her clean out the lunchbox and sort out the compostable material. So all these great ideas, and these are things that I did for my kids. We're already coming to our first station break, so let's transition. You're listening to the Story Walking Radio Hour here on the syndicated Dream Vision 7 radio network. Please share this episode with friends, family, and school leaders so they can make better choices about food waste and recycling. I'm your host, Wendy Natalie Fashon, and I'll be returning in a moment to introduce our guests, Jim Corwin and Chris Ratcliffe. They're the co-directors of the Rhode Island Schools Recycling Club, and we'll continue to talk about food waste recycling. Stay tuned.
How can you make a difference on this crazy planet? Listen to nature-inspired stories and interviews with environmental educators for some new ideas. Sustainable Living News writer, nature walker, and youth educator Wendy Natterney Fashon hosts the Story Walking Radio Hour to talk about issues that matter and to introduce you to people who are coming up with creative, sensible solutions. Let's engage with Earth, with spirit, and with one another. Heart to heart to solve problems and co-create more meaningful life stories. Tune in to Nature's Loving Vibes every Monday at 9 a.m. and 9 p.m. here on the Dream Vision 7 radio network.
Explore Reiki, one of the most popular energy healing practices in the world, at the Wisdom of Reiki Conference. Held at Omega Institute in Rhinebeck, New York, the Wisdom of Reiki Conference brings together leading Reiki teachers and authors to share insights, skills, and spiritual wisdom. Mention discount code DREAM for 20% off when you register for the Wisdom of Reiki Conference at Omega, October 1st to the 3rd. Learn more at eomega.org.
Why would God design a heart-shaped flower that cries? In a picture book titled The Angel Heart, a curious child picks such a flower and carefully pulls it apart, one poetic petal at a time, to reveal the answer. Discover the miracle of the heart and its role in providing comfort, joy, and peace. Written in the language of love, this uplifting story is sure to open up conversations about emotions, spiritual beliefs, the circle of life, or even fairy magic. Give your favorite child the gift of love. The Angel Heart by Wendy Natterney Fashon, available through Amazon and Balboa Press.
This is Dream Vision 7 Radio Network, uniting mankind with universal love. Our shows are created from the heart, bringing each listener to a place of divine enlightenment. Breathe, relax, and enjoy. Let life flow.
Welcome back to Story Walking Radio Hour here on the syndicated Dream Vision 7 Radio Network. I'm your host, Wendy Natterney-Fashon, and today we're talking about food waste recycling with our guests, Jim Corwin and Chris Ratcliffe, co-directors of the Rhode Island Schools Recycling Club. Welcome, gentlemen. Thank you for joining us today.
Hi, Wendy.
Thanks, Wendy.
Yeah. So let's start with your personal stories. I want to know how you came to launch the Rhode Island Recycling Club. Which one of you wants to start?
You know, I'll start with that. This is Chris. So, Wendy, okay. Thank you for having us here today. So Jim and I used to produce the Earth Day Festival in Rhode Island in partnership with the Rhode Island Department of Environmental Management, the Environment Council of Rhode Island, and Rhode Island Resource Recovery. And the last festival that we produced was at a place called Goddard Park, and it was a big success. We had 10,000 people that showed up. It wasn't good for the people in East Greenwich, though, because it basically shut down Main Street in East Greenwich. But it was a big concert and festival, and after the event was over, people left their trash behind. And it caused us to say, you know, is having a big event and a big concert the best way to really support Earth Day and forward the message of Earth Day? So when we were having our recap meeting and we had our stakeholders there, somebody at that meeting brought in a front page article from the Providence Journal written by Ed Fitzpatrick. And the title was Recycling's Hard Lessons. And in it, Fitzpatrick talked about this school in Providence that had won this award for their outstanding recycling efforts. And so he wanted to go and find out what they were doing. So he went to this elementary school, and he went into the classroom, and he spoke to the students, and he asked the students what they were doing with recycling. And they showed him the recycling bins and how they put the paper in one bin and the plastic in another bin. And then he said to the teacher, "What happens to the recyclables from here?" And she said, "I don't know. Why don't you go talk to the custodian?" And so he went and talked to the custodian, and the custodian said, "We don't have a recycling program in the school. Everything gets thrown in the trash." So that was kind of an aha moment. And at that moment, we started discussing perhaps shifting away from just supporting Earth Day and doing something that made a difference. And that's how we created the Rhode Island Schools Recycling Club.
Okay.
I should add to that, this is Tim, that over the course of, I think, about 7 years, we were able to improve the recycling rate, the way the schools are recycled correctly, from under 20% to over 80%.
Fantastic.
Yeah, it was significant. And one of the things I just want to add to that as well is that up to that point, there had never been a study to find out how many schools in Rhode Island were actually recycling. And so we really initiated the first ever audit of all schools in the state. And that's how we got the data that it was, you know, less than 20% of schools had a recycling program.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, I've been in a number of classrooms with the work that I do, and you see the bins where they do sort. But just because that's in the classroom and the teacher's teaching it doesn't mean it's you know, being continued and goes to the right place from there. So
right.
I totally get that. Yeah. No, it's a big problem.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So as you were starting to bring more and more schools on board, what were the greatest challenges in convincing schools to develop recycling programs that really did carry, you know, all the way through from the classroom through the janitor and, you know, all the way out the door?
Sure. There were lots of issues. First was the administration, is that there's so many things that the administration is working on. It was hard to get their attention. And so we really worked to get their attention to at least admit there was an issue. But the biggest challenge for us really, it was the custodians, because what happens in most schools is that the teachers and the students leave in the afternoon, and the custodians come in at 4 o'clock or 4:30, and they take those bins and they dump them into one trash can and just throw them away. And if you think about the process of it, it's much easier for a custodian to wheel one big barrel into a classroom and mix all of the trash, including the recyclables, into that barrel than it is to have two of them. So that was really one of the biggest challenges that we've got. And we've had schools that have come on as recyclers and then they fall off as recyclers. But mm-hmm. one of the interesting things that as we were doing these recycling audits is that we started to look at, when we would do a waste audit, we would go into, similar to what you said, is we'd go into the dumpster and we would open up the bags and look and see what the trash was. And we would weigh it. And we found that almost 75% of the trash, the weight of the trash in the dumpster was coming from the lunchroom. And so we kind of shifted from recycling paper and plastic to food waste diversion. And so really in 2005, we launched a program with quite a few schools, and it was just a liquid diversion program where we would give the schools a 5-gallon bucket with a colander that would sit in the bucket, and we would have students just dump their milk out and then have the milk cartons separated so that they could then be recycled. And so that was what we really started with, and then what we're doing now has really grown from there.
Wow. Okay. Interesting. Okay, so
talk about challenges, as we have transitioned to food, I will say that it's the students and the teachers who are most enthusiastic. There's no question about that.
I'll bet.
The food service providers have also been very supportive. Chartwell's and Aramark and Sodexo are all trained in food waste recovery and composting. And so I think, as Chris pointed out, the biggest challenge is getting a supportive administration and a supportive facilities director and custodian.
Okay.
Because if you don't have that, at the end of the day, they're going to make a decision about what to do. And so that's probably the biggest challenge.
Yeah. Great. Well, thanks for sharing that. All right. So let's shift a little here. And knowing that Rhode Island's recently passed legislation requiring waste recycling and refuse disposal in Rhode Island schools, I'm wondering if you played any kind of a role in the formation of or the advocacy for this policy.
So Jim and I have been really working with many different environmental stakeholders to support this initiative, but the wonderful thing about this particular initiative is there were so many different environmental organizations that were in support of it, and it really created this kind of groundswell of support. So I would say it was really a team effort of many different organizations, from the person who wrote the legislation all the way down to the organizations that showed up and testified in support of the legislation.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah, in 2019, Chris and I received a grant from the Attorney General's office to go out and quantify how much waste is there in schools. And so I think one of the things that we contributed to this legislation is the data we collected allowed us to know that the original legislation said that an educational entity generating not less than 30 tons of organic waste qualified mm-hmm. for it. And the truth was there were no schools that produced that much organic waste in a year. And so we changed the definition of educational entity from school, an individual school, to a school district, which makes virtually every district comply.
Okay. That makes total sense. So are you finding that districts will they be? I mean, I guess it's hard too soon to know right now because the legislation's so new. Will there be someone, say, in a district that takes a lead in this for the whole district, or any idea how that might play out?
I think so. I mean, we've seen it with recycling in schools, and what we tend to find is that you'll have one or two districts that will take the lead and create kind of a positive buzz about what they're doing. And then other districts will look at that district and say, we want to be like that as well. The challenge that we've got is this is an unfunded mandate. And so that what we're trying to mm-hmm. do with our work right now is quantify what the savings are by reduced hauler fees when we divert food waste to a composting facility or to the anaerobic digester to figure out whether or not it's kind of a zero-sum game here, whether there is an incremental cost in diverting or whether there are savings. And that's going to be a really important piece of data to be able
provide
school districts so they know.
Mm-hmm. Right. And I don't know, maybe some districts, I don't know if it's the town. Does the town take the cost, go to the town? Is it the town
the
responsible?
The town does.
Okay. So it's sort of a town school,
It is.
Issue.
For example, we're working in Smithfield right now, and they have a 10-year agreement with waste management, and we're working with one individual school, and we will probably reduce the waste going to the landfill by 75% out of that one school. So one would think that you can have a smaller dumpster, you don't need as frequent pickups, and there can be savings in addition to the tipping fees and hauling fees.
Right.
But we're going to have to slowly work through that as these contracts change and as they come up for renewal.
Okay, cool. Okay, then my next thing I wanted to get into was this whole idea of the food waste audit, and how does one go about conducting a food waste audit? You've been involved in the food waste audits yourselves, have you not?
Yes, we have.
So how does one go about a food waste audit? Well, you know, the first thing is to do a site survey and understand who all the stakeholders are and introduce yourself to all the stakeholders. And like I said, we worked with all three food service providers, and they were all extremely helpful. Getting to know the custodians is very important as well. And then we put a team of environmentalists together, and we went in and, we decided that we wanted to segment the waste into five categories because we were measuring fruits and veggies, we were measuring all other food scraps, we were measuring liquids, recyclables, and recovered food. And, it was really a matter of just as the students came up, taking their trays and segmenting those and then measuring what it was and taking the recovered food to a local food pantry.
Okay.
And,
cool.
And one of the things that Chris and I have done is created a food waste reduction toolkit for Rhode Island schools, which was based on a similar toolkit that was created for Illinois school. We partnered with an organization called Seven Generations Ahead in Illinois, and we customized it to Rhode Island schools. And in the toolkit is a chapter on measuring food waste that has probably six or seven links to setting up food waste audits. So it's a very nice how-to guide for any school that wants to do it.
Okay, fantastic. All right, we're coming up on break right now. So listeners, thank you for joining us here on the Story Walking Radio Hour. Please help us grow our community of listeners and difference makers. And we are going to come back in a couple of minutes. We're talking about food waste recycling with Jim Corwin and Chris Ratcliffe, co-directors of the Rhode Island Schools Recycling Club, and our conversation will continue after this station break.
Why would God design a heart-shaped flower that cries? In a picture book titled The Angel Heart, a curious child picks such a flower and carefully pulls it apart, one poetic petal at a time, to reveal the answer. Discover the miracle of the heart and its role in providing comfort, joy, and peace. Written in the language of love, this uplifting story is sure to open up conversations about emotions, spiritual beliefs, the circle of life, or even fairy magic. Give your favorite child the gift of love. The Angel Heart by Wendy Natterney Fashan. Available through Amazon and Balboa Press. How can you make a difference on this crazy planet? Listen to nature-inspired stories and interviews with environmental educators for some new ideas. Sustainable Living News writer, nature walker, and youth educator Wendy Natterney Fashan hosts the Story Walking Radio Hour to talk about issues that matter and to introduce you to people who are coming up with creative, sensible solutions. Let's engage with Earth, with spirit, and with one another. heart to heart to solve problems and co-create more meaningful life stories. Tune in to Nature's Loving Vibes every Monday at 9 a.m. and 9 p.m. here on the Dream Vision 7 Radio Network.
Delight your kids with an enchanting journey by reading the Paper Doll Kids Children's Book by Deborah Beauvais and Janine Sullivan. There's even a catchy tune, Kids for Love Song, produced by Bob Sherwood and sung by kids just like yours. The story weaves around seven paper dolls flying around the world doing good deeds as they bring important attention to our endangered animal friends. There's even a magical ring with a universal message. Kids become interested in service projects, action through compassion, and planting seeds that nurture positive change. The Paper Doll Kids and Kids for Love Song are a production of the Kids for Love Project. Get the book now on Amazon Kindle and the song on CD Baby or iTunes.
Edicia is a U.S. nonprofit dedicated to the dream of ending childhood malnutrition for millions of children around the world. Through the manufacture of Plumpy Nut and other nutrient-rich, peanut-based, ready-to-use foods, Edicia has already delivered life and hope to nearly 1 million children in over 26 developing countries. To find out how you can join Edicia's dream of ending childhood malnutrition, please visit ediciaglobal.org.
This is Dream Vision 7 Radio Network, uniting mankind with universal love. Our shows are created from the heart, bringing each listener to a place of divine enlightenment. Breathe, relax, and enjoy. Let life flow.
Welcome back to the Story Walking Radio Hour here on the syndicated Dream Vision 7 Radio Network. I'm your host, Wendy Natterney-Fashon, and we're talking with our guests Jim Corwin and Chris Ratcliffe, co-directors of the Rhode Island Schools Recycling Club, about food waste recycling. So let's jump back in. Okay. And we were just talking about the Food Waste Reduction Toolkit, and I don't know if you wanted to talk a little bit more about that and where people can find that.
Absolutely. The toolkit is available for free on our website, which is at Rhode Island Recycling Club.org. I'm sorry, Rhode Island Recycling Club.org. We don't have schools in the URL. And the toolkit provides schools with helpful information and resources for implementing many strategies for preventing, recovering, and diverting food waste. The solutions, there are some that are quick and easy to implement, and there are some that that really require more coordination and resources. And one of the things that we really encourage through the case studies and the success stories in the toolkit is how important it is for students, teachers, food service staff, lunchroom staff, parents, and administrators to take a role in a school's food waste reduction program. And so I highly recommend it. There's seven chapters, and it's filled with interesting case studies and links to all kinds of things that are going to help schools decide what they want to do. They can take a couple of small steps initially and then eventually do the kind of programs that we are currently doing with our six pilot schools, which includes diversion of food waste, recovery of food that is untouched and can be donated, and prevention strategies. And of course, prevention strategies are the strategies that require a cultural change in the cafeteria. They require food service workers, not necessarily from the food service providers, but the hourly paid cafeteria workers and the custodians to be aware of how you can reduce food waste before it happens. Let me ask you a question, Wendy. Who do you think, which grade levels do you think waste the most food? Elementary students, middle school students, or high school students?
I would guess elementary students, because I think they're pickier eaters.
Well, you're absolutely right. And one of the reasons that Chris and I noted as we did these food waste audits was because in many instances, they get way too much food on their plate. When we measured the food given to a first grader and compared it to the food given to a high schooler, it was the same weight. And so there is a strategy called offer versus served, which is heavily endorsed by the USDA. And it is to be more clear with students about what constitutes a reimbursable meal. And the fact is, you do not have to take all five components of a meal. You can take three, provided that one is a fruit and or a vegetable. And milk is not mandatory. And so, you know, we saw excessive waste in some of these categories where food service workers who are not trained put way too much food on some of these kids' trays.
And make everybody take milk.
Yeah. All right. So how are the food service people trained? Does the actual food service, your Aramark or your Sodexo, do that, or do you bring special people in to do that?
That's an initiative that we are working on with the University of Rhode Island Extension has created a food recovery program, and we are planning to tailor that for the paraprofessionals who work in the cafeteria and custodians as well, so that they can eventually get certified in a certain kind of sustainability practice for cafeterias. We need much more attention to what goes on in a cafeteria. It should not be about just pushing kids, you know, getting kids in and out as quickly and efficiently as possible, but it really needs to be about taking what you're going to eat and eating what you take and understanding what a reimbursable, nutritious meal is designed to be.
One of the things I wanted to mention,
Go ahead.
When we look at food waste, is that when Jim and I did these audits with the Attorney General's, the help of the Rhode Island Attorney General's office, is we estimated that in the aggregate that Rhode Island schools are wasting 5 million pounds of food a year that's being sent to the landfill. And I think an interesting statistic about this, Wendy, is that the Rhode Island Community Food Bank distributes about 11 million pounds of food to hungry people a year. And so roughly half of that is what we're wasting in the schools. So it's a big problem that has to be addressed.
Wow. Yes. Yep. Okay. You know, I was thinking you had asked me the question earlier about, you know, elementary students. And I'm just thinking back to when my kids were in elementary school. And they didn't like buying lunch at school. Because they didn't like waiting in line, and they didn't like waiting in line to get their food, because by the time they got their food, they didn't have enough time to eat it, because I think they had 20-minute lunch periods back then. I'd pack them a lunch, and that way they could just go straight to the lunch table and start eating. And I do think, you know, sometimes kids, they need a while to eat. And, you know, they get talking, and when they're talking, they're not eating. And I think that may be another aspect of, you know, why we get food waste, because the kids don't have time to eat it.
It's also the
I don't know if you found that at all or not, but that's what my kids told me.
Yeah, I think one of the things is that the reason that the schools are serving food versus allowing students, just offering it to them and allowing them to choose what they want, is speed. And they have to move the line quickly.
Yes.
And so I think that's part of it.
Mm-hmm.
But there's no question, Wendy, there have been studies that show when you elongate the lunch period and when you schedule recess before lunch, it reduces food waste by double-digit numbers. So those are, you know, those are strategies that can be employed, and they have been helpful.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So maybe you can tell us some of the success stories you've had with some of the schools. Can you share some?
Chris, do you want to start with some of the early success stories?
Sure. I mean, when we started the liquid diversion program, we were able to work with entire districts, and those were Cumberland, North Smithfield, Boroughville. And then the other thing that we started doing and working with schools was, you know, where do you divert these food scraps? And so we worked with a farm in Pascogue, and it is called My Blue Heaven Pig Farm. And prior to COVID, he was picking up from 30 different schools every single day and using it to feed to his hogs. And that was all, again, Cumberland, Woonsocket, Boroughville, and North Smithfield schools. So I think that was an early success that we had.
I love that. Wow, what a great use for
In our current initiative, the Health Communities Grant, the Get Food Smart RI, our goal is to work with 6 schools as pilots and to divert, reduce, and recover food waste. COVID has kind of slowed us down, but we are currently working with 2 schools, Birchwood Middle School in North Providence and LaPerch Elementary in Smithfield. And we are currently doing how to compost workshops. Rhode Island Resource Recovery is coming in and doing their new presentation on food waste prevention. And we are working with student green teams on job descriptions for monitoring the sorting stations and recovering the food. And we've developed relationships with local pantries for donating. And we begin diverting in the latter part of October at both of those schools. And over the course of the year, in a normal school year, when everybody's back in the cafeteria, we estimate that by diverting with those schools, we're going to reduce the amount of organic waste going to the landfill by about 12 tons.
That's huge. That's fantastic.
Yeah, and by the way, 2 tons of that is also going to be donated. So it's, as you pointed out, it's pretty significant the amount of food that gets wasted at schools. Chris, I think we estimate that 79% of the waste coming out of a school is food.
That's right. That's right. And one of the things, I mean, I would just encourage everybody who's listening is to go and look at the toolkit. And I'll also say that for our website, you don't spell out the word Rhode Island, so it's RIRecyclingClub.org, and you can get your information there.
Great. So anything else that you want to add to our conversation today? We definitely covered a lot here. And I think this is so timely with what's going on.
I think for schools to start thinking about this now. We have to become a sustainable economy in so many different ways. And Chris and I have targeted specifically elementary and middle schools because we feel as though there's a much higher level of engagement with middle and elementary school students than at high school. And our goal is to have these students learn about this and bring it home as well begin, you know, a consciousness about the value of food and, you know, kind of the arrogance of food waste. And so that's, you know, we're hopeful that this is going to be part of the solution. 16% or 18% of the methane produced in this country comes from food waste in landfills. And so it can make a big difference over the course of the next decade if we get these students on our side.
Definitely make a big difference. And I know I know on your website, you just also mentioned you've got some great partners you're working with, and people can go to the staff and partners page and find out who all you're working with. I think it's that list, I'm sure, continues to grow as you find more partners that are doing composting, right, and so forth.
The infrastructure for organic waste is going to continue to grow with this new legislation. And we can make it much easier for a school to do this because we have contacts with the haulers, we have contacts with the composting organizations, and we can, provide cost impact statements and other things that administrators are going to want to see as they move in this direction.
Excellent. Okay. Well, great. So it's time to conclude this episode on food waste recycling. Thanks, Jim and Chris, for sharing your stories and for letting us know all about the Rhode Island Schools Recycling Club, you know, how that all came to be, everything that you're doing. It's fantastic. Listeners, you can connect with Jim and Chris and learn more by visiting their website, and we'll have that on the podcast page. It's www.RI, for Rhode Island, recyclingclub.org. please share this informative episode and podcast with friends and family and help us spread the word about school waste audits, waste management strategies, related educational materials, all of this. And if you're interested in learning more about school-based recycling, we will provide some various resource links related to today's show on our Dream Vision 7 Radio Network podcast page for this episode. The purpose and mission of the Storywalking Radio Hour is to open minds and foster difference makers, because we got to do a much better job of understanding our environmental problems so we can introduce solutions and start taking action. All of you, you can all be difference makers simply by sharing this episode and previous episodes. Storywalking podcasts reside on the Storywalking Radio Hour archives page at dreamvision7radio.com. That's numeral 7.radio.com. Under the Sustainable Living Show listings, anyone can download the podcasts and listen to them through an iPhone or a computer. Forward favorite episodes to family and friends. The Storywalking Radio Hour airs on syndicated Dream Vision 7 radio network every Monday at 9 a.m. and 9 p.m. Listen online on your mobile device while you're outside walking or just simply sitting around enjoying a cup of tea. And for a full schedule of Dream Vision 7 radio programming, go to dreamvision7radio.com. Dream Vision 7 Radio Network is the media partner for Omega Institute. I am so grateful you all came to join us here today on the Storywalking Radio Hour. Thank you. I'm your host, Wendy Natterney-Fashon, here with Jim Corwin and Chris Radcliffe, and we are wishing you a wonderful day filled with the tremendous abundance that nature and life itself has to offer. Take care.
Once again, the Storywalking Radio Hour has covered a lot of ground. Please join Wendy Natterney-Fashon next time for a new edition of the Storywalking Radio Hour. This show airs every Monday at 9 a.m. and 9 p.m. Listen live on dreamvision7radio.com, where you can also access archives of previous Storywalking Radio Hour episodes. Find them under the Sustainable Living section. And visit the storywalking.com website, where you can contact Wendy to learn more about the practice of storywalking.
This is Dream Vision 7 Radio Network, uniting mankind with universal love. Our shows are created from the heart, bringing each listener to a place of divine enlightenment. Breathe, relax, and enjoy. Let life flow.